On this episode of Big Boys Don't Cry, we discuss the film Let It Snow. You don't have to have seen the film to enjoy the podcast, but if you do proceed and listen without having seen the film, just be aware that the plot will be spoiled for you. Enjoy. Hello.
Good evening.
Sorry, I was just typing in the chat window to tell you that I was born ready.
Damn straight you were.
We don't know what I was born ready for, but yeah, that's the truth. I was born ready.
You were born to run, born to die,
well,
we're born in the USA.
Yeah. And that's from Samuel Beckett.
More like Damuel Beckett. That's a good quote.
Damn, you're all Beckett.
How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. This is my second week of being off work, so I'm pretty happy about that. I've been watching lots of rubbish on Netflix, seeing friends and family and stuff. It's been great. How about
Excellent. I am fine. It is nearly Christmas, and Christmas will bring with it a brief respite of relaxation.
Yeah, before we go back to the hellscape that is, you know, the post 2019 election landscape. I wasn't going to mention it because you said, how are you? And obviously I'm feeling this very, very crushing sense of being a bit like in, you know, the bit in Star Wars when they're in the trash compactor and the walls are closing in on them. I feel a bit like that.
Yes, yeah, that's a little bit how it feels.
But I was trying to be positive. But anyway, good news. Headline in the Daily Star: Yuri Geller branded spoon nonce on Twitter after claiming he helped Boris Johnson win the election. So, there you go.
I mean, accurate headline.
Yeah. You heard about this?
Yeah, he claimed that he assisted Boris Johnson by bending spoons. Some bullshit.
No, he gave him a special spoon.
He gave him a special spoon. Just fuck off.
Yeah. He's very odd.
Terrible, terrible con artist.
Related articles. TV psychic Yuri Geller's new museum features paintings by Michael Jackson's pet chimp.
I mean, that's what you want to see, don't you?
Yeah.
The chimp of a alleged sexual abuser painted some pictures, and that's what you want in when you go to the museum. You want to see that.
Yeah, absolutely. They're probably better than Michael Jackson's own paintings, right?
I mean, probably. I highly doubt that there is a high quality to those paintings. Much like there's not a high quality to his video games. Did you ever play Moonwalker, the video game?
No. I thought you meant Yuri Geller for a second.
Yuri Geller Simulator 2019.
Bend spoons and talk utter nonsense, the video game.
So it's just lots of quick time events where you've got to press buttons in the right order so as not to come across as a complete fraud on daytime TV.
God. Spoonbender 2000.
Yeah.
That sounds like a sort of F-Zero style game, but with spoons.
Yeah,
I
think
how that would work.
Yeah, not great. Not great. So this week has been a dodgy one.
Yeah. That's putting it mildly.
It's been an emotional one for the UK. And what better way
to... We've got Mariah Carey advertising crisps. And in nowhere in the advert does it say Christmas.
Also, you know, you've seen that tiny, tiny bite she takes out of the crisp at the end of the advert.
Yeah, that is after fighting with a surf to get...
That is immediately being spat out as soon as the camera's finished rolling. Blatantly. She does not eat Walker's crisps.
Yeah, she doesn't eat crisps.
No.
Not any crisps at all, let alone Walker's. Not even the fancy.
Not even fancy. She's wouldn't.
Not even like Tyrrell's vegetables.
Yeah, she ain't got time for that. Not.
She won't even have a kettle chip.
Not even Paprika Max, the king of all crisps.
Those are good crisps.
Yeah, they are good crisps.
Underrated, actually, because they look really cheap and tacky, but they're actually very, very good.
It's the ridge size allows for maximum terrible for you salty goodness. To get
that's
embedded
so
into the ridges.
That,
yeah. Because a lot of ridged crisps, the ridges aren't actually very much, but with Max, it's lots of ridges, so all of the salt gets in. All of the flavour gets in.
Nothing worse than a small ridge.
No. No, exactly.
Yeah. If you're going to ridge it, commit to it.
You got to go full ridge. Ridge over the River Kwai. That's how far you've got to go.
Somehow, we've been talking about that film in multiple episodes. I don't think I've ever seen it.
Have you not? I've seen it. I've seen it a few times. It's one of those films that used to be on at Christmas all the time.
What channels were you watching at Christmas? I never saw it. The Great Escape was always on, but I think this was stuff we had on video.
Christmas Boomer Channel, obviously.
TBM, Turner Boomer Movie.
Yeah, definitely.
But no, you know what else was always on at Christmas? Was The Brave Little Toaster. You see that film?
See, I've not ever seen it. I've heard that it's good. But
it's so good. It's got songs in it. It's great. It's kind of a wacky, out there idea, but it really, really works so well.
I feel that I probably wouldn't be able to enjoy it now, having never watched it as a kid. But I'd quite like to give it a go at some point.
I'm trying to think if there's a romantic plot in it, but there really isn't. Unless you talk about the platonic love between a man and a toaster. That's good enough, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we want.
All right, we'll fit it in.
It's better than B-movie, isn't it?
Yeah, because B stands for Boomer.
Boomer extraordinaire movie. That's what the B-movie's about.
I heard some right-wing radio host in the US said that Boomer is like the N-word of this generation.
Yeah, of course they did.
There were loads of people calling and saying, okay, Boomer.
Yeah, that sounds about right. The false equivalency of the right wing is truly something to behold. I saw my favorite Taking the Center Ground headline, by the way, which was a vaccinations one by, I think it was the New York Times, where they put, one side of this debate feels as though vaccinations are a vital part of our society. The other thinks it curtails freedom of expression and religious freedom. It's like, well, one side will save hundreds of thousands of lives. The other side can go fuck itself.
Yeah, that's the kind of journalism that we need. We've got people trying so hard to just present everything as like as if there are no facts anymore.
Yeah, not every opinion is valid to cover in equal measure when you're supposed to be a critical thinker as a journalist.
And we're actually a lot further down that road than we realise, aren't we? Like, it's all of the election coverage was all, oh, Boris Johnson said this thing, which is obviously a lie, but we're not going to say that it's a lie. People should make up their own minds, even though it's obviously a lie.
Yeah, and part of it is they've never really had to deal with the level of bad faith that is currently going on at the moment. Journalists have gotten complacent in the sort of last 20 years. But also it's the change in scope of online journalism and having to be the fastest to everything. Which allows them to just take a source at face value and just publish it and then worry about it afterwards rather than actually going into what that means.
Yeah. No one's discussed the meaning of the phrase spoon nonce in depth yet, have they?
No, not yet.
I'm waiting for that long read in the New York Times.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one, isn't it?
Do Americans have Uri Geller? Do they know who Uri Geller is? I really hope not.
He did leech off Michael Jackson for a very long time, didn't he?
That's true, actually, yeah. Ooh, I hope they've forgotten about him.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, I'm looking at the bridge on the River Kwai. I didn't know it was by Pierre Boulle.
Pierre Boulle's?
Pierre Boulle's, exactly. Who wrote the famous satirical French novel, The Planet of the Boulles.
Exactly. You did it. You blew it up with Boulle.
You maniacs.
Samuel Tell.
You blew it up. You blew up the bridge on the River Kwai. It's got 95% on Rotten Tomatoes, that extremely reliable website.
It is the most reliable critical source. You should definitely
8.1 on IMDb, 87% on Metacritic.
You should definitely base everything off Rotten Tomatoes.
And Rotten Tomatoes only.
Only Rotten Tomatoes. Is it certified fresh? If it's not, I'm not even going to bother reading a review.
Yeah. This complex war epic asks hard questions, resists easy answers, and boasts career-defining work from star Alec Guinness and director David Lean. Oh, man. I love Alec Guinness as well.
It is actually a very good film. It's a very good movie.
You know I hate war movies.
Yeah. It's also got a big bridge in it. and a river.
Yeah, I hate bridges so much. So you know what? The worst possible film I could go and see in the cinema right now, 21 Bridges.
Yeah, you loved Bridges of Madison County.
Yeah, that's because it treats the bridges with contempt.
That movie was just Clint Eastwood going around just swearing at bridges.
Yes, yeah, and then he flipping them the bird. He prints pictures of him flipping the bird at the bridges, and then he puts them all in a bin and burns them at night. And National Geographic are like, this guy's a genius.
See, I kind of want to go and watch 21 Bridges. It sounds like it might be interesting.
It looks great.
Yeah.
And it's a good idea for a good setup for a thriller.
Yeah.
Nothing more than that. Nothing more you need than
and
that.
And Chadwick Boseman is very good.
He is great.
So
I mean, I don't go to the cinema anymore because I've got a baby. So
but why would you need to go to the cinema when Netflix can provide you with movies like Let It Snow?
Exactly. There's no end of incredible Christmas content on Netflix. Why would you even leave your house right now?
You have
there probably is enough Christmas content there. If you like started playing it all now, you'd just get through the entire festive season and not have to talk to your family.
Yes, there is no need to ever go back to anything other than Netflix. So what did you think of Let It Snow?
I thought it was all right. Yeah. How about you? I went into it wanting to like it because it's based on a book that I haven't read, but that's by it's like apparently three different stories in the book, one of which is written by John Green, who I like. So I was like, I wanted to like it, but I thought it was okay. Claire was sort of half in and out of the room, and she was like, it's trying to be Love Actually for teens, there's too many stories and it's rubbish. And I was like, that's fair, but I also still kind of like it.
I mean, there's no creepy bullshit like Love Actually, so that's a winner.
No, there's no like long scene with a guy who looks like he was in the elephant.co.uk advert holding up signs endlessly. I'm never going to let that one go. I found out that it wasn't him, but I'm still convinced it was him. You know, in this post-truth world, I can just believe that myself and nobody else has to, you know, prove it with facts.
You can prove anything with facts, can't you?
Exactly.
So I think I like this movie a fair bit. I wouldn't say it blew my mind, but it is far more competent than the other two Christmas movies we've watched so far.
I don't believe that's a fair assessment of A Christmas Prince 3, The Royal Baby.
But you know how the other two movies
Prince 3, The Butler Did It.
They very much felt like TV movies, whereas this had enough going on that you could consider this kind of a cinematic movie, almost.
10 years ago, this would have been in the cinema.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And in terms of it being a shit Love Actually, I don't think that's a problem here. I quite like I think they got the number of stories right. I think they got the general tone right of each of them. It maybe could have done with a bit more of a lighthearted one here and there, because a lot of them kind of feel a bit serious. A bit too serious, and maybe they could have done with like more of the DJ.
Yes, I was going to say that. More of Goofy DJ guy. He didn't have enough screen time.
No, sure. Goofy DJ guy. Who is Jacob Batalon, who is in the Spider-Man movies. Have you seen the new Spider-Man films?
No, I honestly think the last time I saw a Spider-Man movie, it was being played by Tobey Maguire.
Which, those movies are great.
Am I a boomer?
Yeah, you're a massive boomer. I think we've already established this. What would be the equivalent of a boomer for Spider-Man? I guess Shocker is kind of the most boomer of his villains. Or maybe the Vulture, because he is a legit old man. Like ultimate boomer. But yeah, no, he's in the Spider-Man movies. He plays Spider-Man's best mate. And he's a really talented young actor. And I think a lot of the cast here, actually, they've got a lot of... There's quite a lot of clout between them.
That they're all kind of very young people who are at the beginnings of their careers but have already done good things and I think are going to go on to bigger things.
Yeah, so Kiernan Shipka is the new Sabrina in The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, and has been in all sorts of stuff all over Netflix. The favorite of mine is The Black Coat's Daughter, which is a great movie. It's also known as February, which is an awful title. The Black Coat's Daughter is a really good one. It's a horror movie about these two girls who are at a bit like at a boarding school over winter break. It's very much a sort of psychological, strange, very unnerving horror film. And it's the two sort of core elements of it are her and Emma Roberts.
All right.
And that's a fantastic movie. So
it was in The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Did you watch that show?
Yeah, so I haven't watched all of it, but we've watched the first two or three seasons.
I think after the first two or three, it actually tails off, so you probably don't know. Okay. But the first couple of seasons I thought were really good. But yeah, she plays the daughter that her mum has after she disappears. She's called Kimmy.
Oh, okay, Kimmy.
K-Y-M-M-I.
Yeah, she's very talented. She's going to go far. But then you've also got, you know, all sorts of other people in there who have done a lot of great stuff as well.
Joan Cusack.
Yeah, she's really charming in this as well. You've got another Spider-Man reference. So Shameik Moore, who plays, what's his name in this? Is it Stanley? No.
Sexy rapper boy.
Stuart.
Yeah. What's his name? Stuart. It's something that sounds like a hilarious account.
Stuart Little.
Stuart Pierce.
So he's also Spider-Man. So he plays Miles Morales in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, the animated one.
Which is supposed to be very good.
Yes, yeah. So, you know, more skill there.
He was great.
Isabella Merced plays Dora in the live-action Dora the Explorer movie.
No way. Which is apparently very good.
Yeah, which I've heard good things about.
And it's like they sort of gritted it up just enough to make it accessible to a much wider audience.
She's there just snorting up the crack.
Yeah, it's basically Tomb Raider, but for
love and hate on her knuckles.
Yeah.
Opens with her just kicking the shit out of someone in a dive bar and then is like, oh, I better go do some fucking exploring.
Yeah. Puts on her hat.
Raging speed horn plays. And then bam. Dora the Explorer. So it's a very talented young cast here, and I think they are what propel it so well. Because
you're right, actually, if they were all like the unrecognizable people, not to be unkind, but the unrecognizable people you see in Christmas 24 movies, Hallmark Channel movies, that kind of thing, where, and you know, unless you watch a lot of stuff that is quite far outside the mainstream, you're unlikely to recognize any of the actors. If it was all of that, just those kind of actors, then maybe it wouldn't have the same impact. And that's unfair, because maybe those kind of actors would be okay at it. But you do have to wonder, don't you?
Yes, yeah. I think casting is such an important thing, and I know that seems obvious to say, but you really feel the difference in films like this where, you know, these are some very talented young people with some really great films between them and really great TV shows between them. And it makes a world of difference, really, that they are here and they're doing this. Because it's, I don't know, they carry the movie during its weaker moments. Because there's not a lot here that you haven't seen before. But what sells it to you is the emotion behind it, the impact behind it, the way that you feel for these characters, and that comes down to the acting itself.
Absolutely, yeah. You believe them, you invest in them. All of them are probably things that we could have been in our teens if we'd lived in rural Illinois at this time, or whatever it is. You know, it's all things that I think there's something in there for everyone as well, something in there that everyone can relate to. And I think people always actually underestimate these kind of things if it's more aimed at a teen audience, don't they? But actually it's just as good, or as you say, it's better than A Christmas Prince, and a lot better than a Wet Milk Night, whatever it
was. Yeah, it's much better than
The Night Before
Christmas. Sir Norwich.
Sir
Norwich of Fuckington.
They should have... They should have thrown him into the Waffle House in this one just for fun.
Yeah, and bringing up the Waffle House, that again, it felt almost like an 80s movie, the way that it all framed itself around this shitty restaurant, and the way that it all tied together, that cheesy joke about it being the Awful House because it has no W, and then at the end they find the W and they wrap it in Christmas lights. It all felt very John Hughes.
I was going to say, yeah, if this had been done 30 years ago, John Hughes could have done it for sure. And he'd have made them go on like some quest to get the W.
Yeah, rather than just finding it in the cupboard.
Yeah.
But you know, I I wouldn't say I really like this movie, but it was refreshing to see something like this aimed at young people that works so well. And I think Netflix has become really good at that, like To All the Boys I Loved Before. They become experts at tapping into that kind of film and doing it in a way that isn't patronizing.
Yeah, as you say, it can very, very easily end up being, how do you do, fellow kids, can't it?
Yeah, whereas you know, in reality, this is a New Year's Eve, but for children.
But much better. You know, 3 or 4 stories instead of 50.
Yeah. So I think it does have its flaws, though. And part of that is...
Mostly it's mistreatment of a small and very cute pig.
Yes, which is quite unfair. Also,
you not bring that kind of pig to a noisy environment like a party.
Also, they show you that pig early on, and then it doesn't reappear until right at the end, and that is an insult to the audience.
It's Chekhov's pig.
tension is a pig under the table, yeah. A squealing pig under the table.
Famous quote from Alfred Pigcock.
Alfred Pigpig. Pighog.
Pighog. Alfred Hitchhog.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, I'm so excited for that film. I'm like unreasonably, ridiculously, irrationally excited for it. Even though I heard that the whole animation studio just got fired. So that's obviously very bad.
Yeah, that happens a lot with movies where the animation studios, they often get shunted around at very short notice. And it often happens in places where there's not really much by way of sort of rights or anything like that. So it's an unfortunate situation within the movie industry as a whole, and one that at least has been brought greater scrutiny by this, given, you know, how hard they worked to get it back into this state.
Yeah.
That's
really something that the industry needs to change.
Yep. And also, you know, they did a great job turning that fucking nightmare fuel Sonic the Hedgehog into something more palatable.
Yeah. Something that's now all over my Instagram feed being adorable and doing like an advent calendar thingy.
Although it's no Baby Yoda. Baby Yoda is several steps above.
We discussed this last week. Baby Yoda's a boomer.
Well, Sonic is also a boomer.
Oh, you think Sonic's a boomer?
Well, Sonic is a fully grown...
He hoards gold rings. We'll give him that.
Sonic is an adult at the time of the original Sonic games.
Yeah, how old is he supposed to be anyway?
Well, if you look at the size of him versus the size of the little animals that come out of the robots in the Sonic games, clearly they are the young animals that come out. Whereas Sonic is clearly an adult hedgehog in 1991, I think the first Sonic was. So let's
Tails
say
is supposed to be a teenager.
So let's say that puts him 20 years old. So that makes him born in 1961. That puts him just about into boomer territory.
No. That's 30 years.
What?
1961 to 1991. That's 30.
Oh, okay. So 1971. I'd still say that's boomer territory nowadays. Yeah. Not in terms
that's
of being a
crossing
baby.
Crossing over into Generation X.
Yeah.
I think he's a slacker.
Well, no, I wouldn't say he's Gen X, because Gen X you're generally seen born a little bit later.
Yeah, there's the sort of the cusp of each thing where you don't really fit in.
Yeah.
So, maybe that's why Sonic was so angry.
So, yeah, he was a Gen X icon for youngsters who grew up in that time period, but he was already an adult. So... that kind of puts him in the same territory as, you know, would you consider Billy Corgan to be a Gen Xer or to be an icon of the Gen X movement?
That's a tough question. Yeah. These are the kind of questions that we have to ask.
But
I don't know.
But Sonic is shit in comparison to Baby Yoda. Baby Yoda's fucking great.
Would you consider Smashing Pumpkins to have more than 3 good songs? I would say no.
I definitely would say yes. I love a how many Smashing Pumpkins albums are there that are good? Because
I don't know. I've really tried hard with Smashing Pumpkins, but there are only like a handful of songs I can really get into.
Despite
most of it, I struggle with.
Despite all your rage, you're still just a rat in a cage. Exactly. I see.
that song's all right.
See, I really like
Tonight. Tonight is incredible. I love that song. That's like way above everything else they've ever done for me.
I prefer the stuff off Siamese Dream personally. Siamese Dream is a really great album. Their first album is massively overrated by hipsters who think that it's cool to say that it's good. It's not. Sorry, guys.
What songs are on that?
Fucking Bullshit. and the...
Oh, yeah, I remember that song. It's great. My favorite.
And We Fucking Love Pumpkin Pie, which I think is...
Is that where their name comes from?
Yeah, that's where it comes from. So I think...
Pumpkin Pie and then smash it.
I think their main single off that was... what was it called? I can't remember now. But it was... It's just another noisy band. Whereas then, you know, they introduced the shoegaze elements for Siamese Dream. The melancholy and the infinite sadness is very experimental. And then after that, they had... did you ever listen to Adore?
No, I don't.
So they went kind of electronic and darker with that one, which is quite interesting. And then they released Machina, which was their last good album.
I'm willing to give them a chance to try again, but I've put on some of their albums before and not really fully engaged. But this was some time ago, so I may well be wrong.
Yeah, they've got a handful of very good albums behind them. So Siamese Dream is kind of a... If you like Sonic Youth, I suppose, but you don't have any imagination, that's you'd listen to Siamese Dream. But yeah, there's some really great stuff on it. Cherub Rock is one of my favorite songs ever. Today is a banger.
Yeah, that's good.
Disarm as well is really good. They're sort of like the precursor to Melancholy's more experimental stuff. But yeah, so yeah, but welcome to the Smashing Pumpkins cast, everybody. But
we don't do sound like a couple of boomers just talking about all the shit that no one cares about.
Oh, back in my... It wasn't even back in our day.
Back in our day, in 1991, when we were 3 years when old, Sonic was an adult.
But yeah, I love Baby Yoda so much. I
haven't... Have you seen the man?
Yes, I have.
His name is DeLorean.
I have seen Mando Lorian, which I believe is the character name.
Mando Calrissian.
But yeah.
Is it good?
I think it's good. It's very simplistic. It's like an old samurai TV show. Or like an old Western TV show. You know, a lot of those Westerns base themselves off the samurai stories and samurai TV shows. So
that actually sounds great.
Yeah, and it's good. It's really... What works so well about it is its simplicity. And the fact that Baby Yoda is the cutest thing ever to be put on TV screens.
I'm not going to watch it between now and Thursday. We're recording this on Tuesday because Thursday is Star Wars Day. Well, the day that I go to see The Rise of Skywalker and text you to spoil it for you, obviously.
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
Which I'm very much looking forward to. I'm looking forward to seeing it, but I am hesitant because...
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a little bit hesitant just because they've been saying so much about getting back to the core story and kind of suggesting that they're going to go back on what The Last Jedi did. And you know how I feel about destiny in films.
Yeah.
I fucking hate destiny nonsense in films.
Destiny's not real.
Destiny is not real. Destiny and a belief in destiny plays into the mindset that made Boris Johnson Prime Minister.
So how did Destiny's Child fit into this?
Well, I don't know.
Real or not real? Beyonce is in fact not real.
Yeah.
You can't prove it.
You can't
prove that Beyonce exists.
She's formed by lasers. It's lasers and smoke.
Yeah.
The whole fallback of destiny and ancestry in movies really bores me. And if they're going to go back to that for the main film, I think I'm going to be a little bit disappointed.
I really hope they don't do that for Rey, because they've spent two films avoiding it.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like they're going to, because it's what the fans want. Apart from it's not really what the fans want, it's what about, 20,000 people want?
Yeah. Which is, you know, enough people to fill a large concert venue. But other than that, who cares?
Yeah. They do not represent Star Wars.
You know, Radiohead have played to that many people and more, but that doesn't mean that they're good.
How dare you? but Radiohead, they weren't in this movie.
No, it's a shame. Actually, it's not a shame. Imagine if it, instead of like a handsome young cool rapper guy, it was Tom York. And you're like, what are you doing on a train, Tom York?
I'm reconnecting with the world.
I'm just gonna go to this restaurant over here.
Although Radiohead, despite all their foibles, they didn't support Boris Johnson.
That's good.
Unlike the shit cheese guy from Blur.
The cheese bloke from Blur.
Cheese bloke from Blur.
He literally lives in the same village as David Cameron.
Failed festival cheese bloke. I've forgotten his name. But he had a shit festival that failed, and now he makes
Alex
cheese.
James?
No, I refuse. Anyone called Alex is just Alex from The One Show.
Oh, yeah. Not Alex Jones, the Gay Frogs InfoWars guy.
Yeah, that's right.
That's he'll forever be known.
Alex Jones.
I haven't heard anything about him recently.
Well, no, because he got banned from everything, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, I wonder why we haven't heard from
him. Alex Jones he started off playing bass in Blur, and then he lost his mind a little bit, and now he just makes cheese and calls frogs gay. It's all the same person. There's only
it's all one guy.
There's only
shouty podcasts.
There's only one person called Alex Jones who is all of the Alex Joneses as a performance artist.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Alex Jones from The One Show is the same.
Yep, very very sane and normal. Totally normal.
Yeah. So I can't remember how we got onto Alex Jones.
The cheese bloke from Blur.
Oh, yeah. Cheese bloke from Blur.
Blur are rubbish, aren't they?
I don't know. They're better than Oasis.
Yeah. They're not annoying lad wankers.
I think The Universal is a really good song. Do you remember Universal?
Yeah, it's all right.
That's a cool song. I have time for Blur, but they are, as always with the British public, they failed to recognise the true legends of the movement. So Pulp and Suede were the two best bands of the whole Britpop scene.
Yeah, I will stand by you on that. Although what is good about Blur is that Park Life became that meme where people would reply Park Life on Twitter to whenever someone says something that sounds like one of the verses of Park Life.
Yes.
Which is funny.
Which is very funny.
No, I haven't seen anyone doing that recently. I might bring it back.
Bring back the classics. And Long Pigs as well. We'll call back to Long Pigs that we discussed on this podcast however many episodes
underrated.
Ago. That album, The Sun Is Off and Out, is proper amazing.
Yeah, and a name that evokes cannibalism.
which is what you want. You want cannibalism in your music.
Of course.
So there was no cannibalism in Let It Snow. Even
so, you were about to start pointing out its flaws. What are its flaws?
A lack of cannibalism, for one thing.
Obviously, yeah. It's the Waffle House, not the
Long Pig House.
Meat. Long Pig House.
No, the Long Pig Lounge.
Long Pig Lounge. That actually sounds like a good name for a venue. Then you turn it over in your head and you're like, oh, maybe not.
I would definitely call a venue the Long Pig Lounge.
That's like your equivalent of, you know, in Alan Partridge when he's like coming up with ideas for TV shows and saying them into his dictaphone. I mean, he's like youth hosteling with Chris Eubank. That's you.
That's
you
me.
With your dictaphone trying to think of venue names.
That's
the Long Pig.
That's me boomering.
I'll
it
say
up.
It again in casual conversation. Hey man, want to go down to the Long Pig Lounge? Yeah, sounds great.
I hear Raging Speed.
Oh, the Fine Young
playing.
Cannibals are on.
make Raging Speedhorn great again.
Oh, jeez,
that I want. No cannibalism. But I feel as though this movie, as much as it is billed as a rom-com, there's not quite enough comedy in it.
No, there are a couple of nice moments, but there's nothing that's like laugh out loud, out and out funny. But does it have to be to carry it off?
Well, if you're gonna make a rom-com, you need some com to go with your rom.
So you're saying there's not enough com?
There is not enough com in this. And there are...
Didn't you think it funny that Joan Cusack was wearing tinfoil?
No.
No.
I didn't find that funny. I thought that was a little bit strange and possibly offensive.
Yeah.
But I there is enough sweetness to carry it. So the scene where they're singing in the church is really sweet. And I was like, oh, this is so nice.
Yeah. What is that song? Was it a song that they made for the film?
No, it's, I can't remember what it was. Let's see if it's mentioned in the trivia section.
I didn't recognize it.
I think it is.
But we had the volume down low and.
I think it went a little something like. Big booty bitches, big booty bitches, suck a big booty bitches, big booty bitches.
It was, let the body sit the let the body oh, wow. It was, oh, of course, it was a new metal medley.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember now.
Breaking into a bit of Edema. Do you remember Edema?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, Edema, what a band. They had a song, possibly two.
Maybe three, if you're lucky. Three, if you're a dedicated reader of Kerrang! Magazine.
Whatever happened to Edema? Because wasn't he the half-brother of the guy from Korn, the lead singer?
Oh, really?
And then they kicked him out.
Yeah. I didn't
and they
know
got
that.
In a new singer.
Hmm. Maybe he fought Jonathan Davis for their ancestral bagpipes and won.
Maybe, or lost.
Or lost, yeah. I'm going to go with Lost, actually. But there is some nice music in this film. It uses the song Christmas TV by Slow Club, which I really like. It's a lovely
song. It's much better than Christmas Radio.
Yeah. What's Christmas Radio? Is that a song?
Oh, it got killed by Christmas TV.
Oh, I see. Christmas TV killed the Christmas Radio stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, my favorite song.
That's the best.
And also has Rock the Casbah during the car chase, which I was like, yeah, okay, I'm down with that.
Yeah, it's good. There's some neat little music in this, which works very well. And yeah, I like it. It's a good film.
Oh, and it does include the sexy singer guy doing some sexy singing as well. And then that becomes the song that's on the outro. I like that because that makes you believe that he's a sexy singer.
Yeah, and it all ties into its kind of own universe, doesn't it?
Yep.
That whole storyline felt a little bit like Notting Hill.
Yeah, as a celeb and an ordinary
person. It kind of just fed into Notting Hill territory, which, I don't know.
And he sort of followed her in a bit of a weird way.
I feel as though it kind of... And that's one of the problems with this film, is it plays it a little bit too safe with its storylines.
Why was he on the train? Maybe I missed something, but like, wouldn't he be on his tour bus or whatever?
I think he basically just said that he did it every so often just to try and get away from his isolation.
Yeah. So he's trying to be a normal guy.
Yeah, he's just trying to escape being completely isolated and going batshit insane like Yuri Geller.
Oh yeah. Is that why Yuri Geller ended up that way?
Yeah, he started out because as a pop star.
He doesn't go on trains.
He started out as a pop star and refused to go on trains, and before he knew it, he was claiming he could bend spoons.
Yep.
And
then next thing you know, he's being called a nonce on Twitter. That's 2019.
Oh, nonce.
We're about to enter a new decade. Can you believe it?
I know. There's so many people to call nonces in the decade to come.
There are so many Tory MPs. I can't get through them.
Nonce is an underrated word.
It is. It's just rude enough, isn't it? It's quite offensive.
It's unbelievable.
But it sounds funny.
It's unbelievably offensive at the individual that you're framing as a nonce.
Yeah.
But it's still an incredibly funny word.
But it also gets used as a verb on Twitter a lot as well.
Really?
Yeah, so I was reading some replies and someone was like, I read this to mean that he nonces spoons. And I was like, well, I get it. Nonce is a verb. Why not?
I mean, all of the world is going topsy-turvy. Why not?
Yeah. Language evolves, you know?
This movie, again, right, this film is...
Are you still pointing out its flaws?
Yeah, I've been very distracted by all of this talk of various other things.
Noncing.
but yeah, none of this, every single one of the storylines, you knew exactly how it was going to go the moment that it started, and I think that's kind of a letdown. It would have been nice if they'd done something a little bit different. Because even something like Love Actually, there were some bits of it where you didn't expect it to work out the way that it did.
I did not expect Bill Nighy to say the words, "Let's get pissed and watch porn."
Yeah, exactly.
I'll say that about Love, actually.
Exactly. Whereas here it does all kind of just, it just plods along. You know what's happening. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but if because of the quality of the acting, it maybe could have stepped up a little.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that it isn't predictable, but you go into it expecting that, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
It's safe predictable that you get from a lot of rom-coms.
Yeah, but this safe predictability of it, still makes it better than a lot of the modern stuff that we've seen, modern Christmas movies that we've seen of late.
Yeah, definitely. Although The Christmas Prince 3, no one predicted that the butler was going to have done it, right?
No, and that's one of the great defining features of The Christmas Prince movies, is that random, unexpected things happen. So maybe if you combine that with Let It Snow, you'd get a genuinely very good film.
Yeah. So it's like a Christmas Prince, but with multiple storylines all happening at once.
Yeah.
Again, this is, we discussed, next year and then the year after that, that's when all the ambitious crossovers start happening in the Netflix Christmas movie universe. That's when it's going to happen.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Prince Richard comes to the Waffle House with his baby and wife.
And then he gets, the random Norwich fella gets teleported there by another old crone. It's like, I say, give me some mead, you harlots.
Yeah, and then Prince some Richard, other nonsense. Because he's a feminist, he's all like, what are you doing, mate? We wouldn't stand for that in Aldovia.
Yeah.
And then they're all like, oh, Aldovia, I heard about that on the film, A Christmas Prince 3. And they're all like, what? And then that's on Netflix. And then it all gets a bit too meta.
Yeah, it all gets
and
a bit...
And the film literally eats itself.
You get people going, wait, am I real? As they see their hands slowly disappear.
Yeah. And at the end, it's all just an old crone laughing maniacally.
Yep. As it turns into the scene from the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Prince Richard's face just starts melting.
Hey, like a waffle as you pour it into the waffle iron.
Yeah. Hey, Netflix, hire us to come and do your next Christmas movie.
Netflix, if you're listening,
we know you are.
A crossover idea for you.
You want to disturb your audience and get the worst reviews ever for your film? Come get
us
in.
They've done that enough, haven't they?
Oh.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of nonsense on Netflix.
There is.
There's a lot of good stuff too.
But
it's at the point now where they're churning out so much content that a lot of it is going to be crap.
We could take it to the next level.
We certainly could take it to the next level.
So
we could get on the roof of that Waffle House.
Yes. Bring it back. Bring it back to us.
I like how there's a point where the buddy to the guy who likes his best friend is all like, you should just play it cool. And then he's like, how do you play it cool? Or is it someone else who asks how you play it cool? Someone says, how do you play it cool? And I'm like, yeah, man, that's how teens talk, and that's how it feels to be a teen. I get it.
Yeah.
No one knows how to play it cool.
Yeah.
The thing is, you young people, when you get to, you know, when you become old and decrepit like us, you still don't know how to play it cool.
Yeah, you never really know how to play it cool.
No, there's no such thing. There's no such thing as playing it cool. Apart from, the only person to ever have played it cool is Miles Davis.
Yeah, literally the
song called "The Birth of the Cool."
Literally the only person.
Yeah, the only cool person in history. So I never really liked the Rolling Stones much, but in this film, I like the like Mick Jaggery dance off that sexy singer does with the dad of the girl he likes. That's funny.
That's a funny little moment.
That's believable and enjoyable and funny.
But there should have been a line where they said, "Exile on Main Street. You better not be horny on Main Street." Which is a joke that I've been trying to get into something on Twitter for a very long time, and have never quite worked out how to do it. But this felt like the right place.
You wanted to say horny on Main Street.
Yes. Whenever I see someone writing horny on Main on Twitter, I just immediately think that's going to be the name of the next fucking Rolling Stones album.
Wait, what's horny on Main?
Horny on Main. It's when you're on the main road and you get horny.
Isn't that the song by Moose T? I'm horny, horny, horny on Main.
That's exactly right. Horny on Main is it's a reference to people who have multiple accounts on social media, and then they have one that they're horny on and one that's their proper account. So if you're horny on Main,
like how Ted Cruz was favoriting porn from his Main account.
Yeah, so I think that's actually where it originated from. Where it became popular from.
You can tell that this year I have really cut back on my social media use, because I'm sure like a year ago I would have been all over that.
Yeah, because
I'd have literally gone into this episode, or as soon as you'd said Exile on Main Street, I'd have been like, oh, I'm horny on Main. I'd have been all over it.
So I think that's what kind of popularized it. Ted Cruz was definitely horny on Main when he posted that pornographic link.
Right. So yeah. Horny on Main Street.
My favorite thing of that whole situation was, I can't remember who posted it. It might have been Bakoon or Pixelated Boat or one of those very funny Twitter channels. Immediately after that went up, they put up a tweet from Ted Cruz's voice saying, time for a little bit of porn-a-rooney.
Wait, did he say that?
No, but it was just perfect sort of, you can just imagine him saying that.
Poor old Ted Cruz.
No, he's a fucking bastard.
Yeah, he's one of the worst people.
He can go fuck off.
Yeah. So yeah, the old dad in this, he's like, you better not be horny on Main, but then the guy wins him over by dancing like Mick Jagger, so it's all good.
I mean, Mick Jagger would have been horny on Main.
He's always horny on Main.
He's horny.
That's his thing.
Horny, horny, horny on Main.
Yeah, that was one of the Rolling Stones' biggest hits, wasn't it?
Definitely. Definitely. So that was a good scene. I like that. And in general, yeah, you get a sense of all these characters being real people, which is nice. Even though they sometimes fall into stereotypes. So, you know, a sick mum going off to super school.
That's one of those kind of like contrived to make it emotional plots from a teen novel turned into a thing movie.
But a lot of them are pretty straight, are pretty sort of down to earth, which I liked. So, you know, two friends fall in love.
I think was the most believable one. Actually, it was all kind of low key. It was all like, yeah, all their relationship is based on is stealing kegs and singing in a church, but that's the kind of stuff that we all would have done at that age.
Yeah, and then you've
stole a keg?
You've got best friends. I've never stolen a keg.
I actually have stolen a keg.
Have you?
It wasn't like a full-size pub one. It was one of those little ones, you know, like you see in the supermarket.
Who did you steal it from? Did you steal it from a supermarket?
Me and my buddy Scott stole it from a party and drank it ourselves.
I say.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable. How dare you?
Yeah.
Did people chase after you in a car?
No, nobody noticed. Everyone was too drunk.
So
we couldn't really have made it into a movie scene.
No, not quite.
And we didn't fall in love either, so bullshit. Scott, if you're listening, I don't love you. I hate you.
I love you, Scott. Do I love Scott or is he someone?
Yeah, you do. You'd like it.
Okay.
He lives in the Middle East. I haven't seen him in like 5 years.
Okay. Well, Scott, I love you, even if Paddy doesn't. We've got a place for you here.
He's an extremely good and hilarious person.
Ah, excellent. But so the storylines, they're in general grounded, you know. A difficulty in a friendship where someone's prioritizing a boyfriend who doesn't care for them. You know, all of these little things.
Instead of buying a pig.
And end up buying a pig, of course. You know, so all of these little stories that work quite well. It's a good film. I didn't expect to think it was as good as I did.
Yeah, it's enjoyable. My also his publicist is Janet from The Good Place.
Yes,
a very very good little pop up.
I feel like that show.
This film, yeah, that's a good show. As I've only seen the first season. The rest is on my list of things to watch probably in 5 years time. When Eric is grown enough to give us some time to watch TV.
Yes, yeah.
But, I like how the dad says, he comes back and he says to the sexy singer guy, I googled you, you grab your crotch a lot.
Which is true.
Yeah. Oh, and isn't that what sparks the Mick Jagger discussion?
Yeah, I think it right. does, doesn't it?
Yeah. Which is great.
So, yeah, it's nice, this film.
And there is, you know, a voiceover at the beginning and end from Joan Cusack saying, "Let it snow."
Saying, "Snow is good. Snow brings people together."
Yeah, we all like snow.
So what else, have you got anything else to say about this movie?
No, I think that's it, really. It's, you know, don't be put off if you think it's just like one of those annoying teen movies or whatever. And don't be put off any movie for that reason, actually, because often stuff that seems like it's aimed at teens is actually good for adults too. And that applies to books as well. But yeah, you could do a lot worse with your Netflix holiday Netflix watching than watching this film.
Yeah,
give it a spin.
Yeah, it's this is much better than you might initially think.
You can skip Wet Milk Night Before Christmas. You can skip that. Christmas Prince 3 is essential viewing, obviously. But this one, yeah, you could do worse. Sit down with a cup of hot apple and yeah.
Sit down with a cup of not hot apple. Hot apple juice.
Hop apple.
Hop apple, otherwise known as. Isn't that a Pokemon? Hop apple.
Yeah, hop apple.
just some hot apple slices, or just an apple, just in a mug.
Put an apple in the microwave, in a mug.
And then take it out.
For 6 to 7 minutes.
Yeah, that's what you want. There is now an apple Pokemon. Did you know that?
Yeah, hop apple.
That's its real name. What is its? Its name is Applin.
Applin.
And then it evolves into Flapple when exposed to a tart apple, or Appleton when exposed to a sweet apple. This makes no sense to me. Appleton looks like an apple pie dragon.
Isn't Appleton the musical that starred on Broadway about the life of Alexander Appleton?
I thought it was
one of the fruit-based founding fathers.
I thought it was an apple-based music-making system, Appleton Live.
Yeah, you see all the famous DJs using it with their apple pads.
Yeah, exactly. There is now an apple-based Pokemon. I'm not sure why. But
I'm very glad that Pokemon is going in a fruit-based
direction. There is some amazing-looking Pokemon in the new Pokemon games. But I think the apples are the best. Particularly,
how do you like them apples?
Particularly given that the apple-based Pokemon are actually quite powerful.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, you know what they say. An apple a day keeps the Gary away.
Yeah, exactly.
I assume Gary is still the villain.
I don't know. Probably. He's got to still be in it, surely.
Yeah.
Gary Oak.
He's probably a boomer as well.
Yeah, when did Pokemon come out?
90?
But no, but they're all like 10 years old at the time and they don't age. Oh, okay. So they're perpetually non-boomer.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
Yeah, and there are no boomers in Pokemon. Apart from Lieutenant Surge. Lieutenant Surge is blatantly a boomer.
Who's Lieutenant Surge?
He is the electric gym leader.
Ah,
do you remember him?
Okay. I can't remember the gym.
He fought in a war and he uses electric type Pokemon.
Okay, if he fought in a war, he's definitely a. We don't have wars anymore.
No, we just have sarky comments on Twitter.
Yeah, we just have calling people a nonce on Twitter.
That's
the new war.
Horny on Main versus nonces. That's the new.
Yeah, when Eric grows up, he's going to be like, "What did you do in the wars, Dad?" He'll be like, "I was horny on Main."
So right, have we got anything else to say, or is that bad about it?
I think that's about it. Yeah, it's a good one. Watch it.
Yeah.
Have you got trivia?
No. There's little trivia here, apart from that apparently it's a bit different from the book.
Oh,
fair enough.
Well, that's always to be expected, yeah. Isn't it? I would like to read it now at some point.
Yeah, I'll give it a go.
And they play broom hockey. I would say I really want to play broom hockey. It looks great. I'm really fascinated by broom hockey.
Broom hockey, more like Chris Froome hockey.
Oh, Chris Froome. Cyclists. I hate fucking cycling. I really don't want to talk about cycling because it's one of those things where I probably have bad opinions.
Do you hate cyclists?
Yes. They can fuck off. Everywhere I go, they're all up in my business, and I'm just trying to walk, you know?
You better hope that our two cycling bandmates are not listening to this podcast right now.
Yeah, Both of them can fuck off as well. We'll get to the next band practice, find the band has been disbanded. We've split up.
Yeah.
Due to transportational differences.
Yeah, this is going to be the fight for our times, isn't it? I don't mind cycling, and I used to watch the Tour de France every year. So
the Tour de France is cool.
So I'm fine with old cycling.
I like that it passes through like all the villages and stuff, and you see people turning out for it. That kind of thing of it being, yeah, it's accessible in a way that no other sporting event is, and I really like that. So
yeah, you hate cycling.
Okay, yeah.
Would you love football if football was just played in one long line?
Yeah, it's just an endless column of people kicking the ball through all the villages and towns.
You've got 1,000 people chasing after a ball for hundreds of miles through France.
Yeah, the Tour de Football.
Tour de Foot.
Yeah, the Tour de Foot.
Yeah, France, if you're listening, we know you are. The nation of France in its entirety.
Nation of France. Emmanuel Macron listens to this all the time.
We've got
his favorite podcast.
Emmanuel, if you're not too busy fucking off everybody in your nation, then how would you like to set a new pastime for your country, le Tour de Foot?
Come on, yeah, we've done it for you. We've given you the idea. You just need to make it happen.
Yeah, come on. Peut-être un petit Tour de Foot, monsieur. Oui, oui.
S'il vous plaît.
S'il vous plaît. Allons-y. C'est le Tour de Foot.
Long garçon.
So how are we going to rate Love is Blind?
Love is Blind.
Love is Blind.
Let it blind.
My brain is gone.
You just want every film to be an enigmatic piece of utter nonsense with Aidan Turner in it.
Yeah, that's what I want. How are we going to rate this?
Let's see. How many times do you grab your crotch when you're dancing like Mick Jagger to make a point?
So I do that, let's say 13 times, I think.
Yeah, that's good. I'll go maybe just one low, give it a 12, because as you say, there's nothing revolutionary about it. It's predictable, but it's enjoyable. And at the holidays, that's what we want.
Yeah.
Predictable enjoyment.
Exactly.
Before we're ready for the big shock of the Tour de Foot coming in,
crashing in, Tour de Foot, just loads of people.
I'll get to work on the rules. We need some rules.
Loads of people trying to kick a ball up a really steep hill and it keeps rolling back down.
Yeah, it's like that cheese rolling thing, but in reverse.
Yeah,
and it passes through every French town.
The rather than the king of the mountains, it's just whoever can pit the ball between their ankles and just hop up the entire hill to get it to the top.
That'd actually be quite skill.
Yeah,
watch that.
Yeah, Tour de Foot. It's going to be great.
Coming in 2020.
Yeah,
you heard it here first. Okay, did we agree what film we were going
to
do next?
No, it was going to be left up to you.
Cool. Well, I had a few ideas. We were looking at, we could do a New Year's Eve type film, but when the next episode goes out, it will be like the 27th of December, but the one after that will be the next year, so it will be the last episode of the year. So do you want to do that? Do you want to do a film with Nicolas Cage in it? Or do you want to do a film with Vince Vaughn in it?
Are they all Christmas-related movies?
Yeah, they all fit with the season.
Because
a New Year's Eve film, a film with Nicolas Cage in it, or a film with Vince Vaughn in it.
Because the other thought I had was,
we could watch New Year's Eve again.
Obviously. No, the other thought I had was,
oh, thank God.
Maybe we make it so that we watch Star Wars, since we'll both have been to the cinema to see it.
Is there gonna be romance in it?
Romance between a lightsaber and another lightsaber.
And we've already done our Star Wars special. Yeah. So we could do another Star Wars special,
or maybe we do that as the first one of the new year.
Well, yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah, we could do that, couldn't we? Why don't we? When are you going to see it?
So
you're going to see it on
Friday. I'm seeing it on Friday. Yeah.
So we could assess the romantic content.
and then see maybe whether we can make a movie out of it, or make a movie out of it, whether we can make
a movie out of it. That is what we do.
So right, so what are the choices? We've got Nick Cage, we've got Vince Vaughn, or we've got New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
I think I'm gonna have to go New Year's Eve on this one, because I like the sheer random of it, as long as it's not rewatching New Year's Eve.
No, it's not. Okay. I did genuinely consider that. But no, it's Trading Places.
Okay, excellent.
Which is it. There's sort of a Christmas film.
It's got yeah. Christmas time.
Yeah.
Yeah, Trading
not
Places.
Not super romantic, but there's a thing. So
yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
And we've mentioned it, I think, briefly before as a potential holiday film. So I think that's a good one.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's do that, and then let's do Star Wars anyway.
Cool.
But I think we should do both.
Cool. Okay.
Cool. Well, we've covered a lot of ground in this episode, haven't we?
We have. We've gone everywhere.
Just like the Tour de Foot will when it kicks off.
Literally. Yeah, literally kicks off.
Very good. Do you have anything else you want to say?
That everyone can fuck off.
Yeah, I agree.
Get out, you bastards.
That's our only response to the election. No more election chat.
No more election chat. Get out.
Get out. Yeah, I agree. So, well, all that remains then for us is to follow that blanket statement by saying that you, as a listener to this program, are exempt from that. And thank you for
no, you're not exempt from it.
You're not exempt.
I refuse.
So, once you fuck off.
Standing our ground. You need to fuck off, and then you need to come back and then like, comment, and subscribe.
Yeah, give us 5 stars.
Give us 5 stars.
And tell all your friends about
this. And say how lovely we are.
Yeah, so what nice people.
Yeah, because we're lovely.
We're screenwriters of brilliant films, inventors of brilliant sports, and all round Renaissance men.
Yeah, because we're great. Yes, we're the best men in the world.
All right. In that case, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week to talk about Trading Places.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've lost my mind a little bit.